MacCast, Sunday, May 15th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How are you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about a number of things, including a new developer preview of Lion was just released. We'll talk about the details that are in that. Is the iPhone 5 coming in September? Details are surfacing, and we'll have to see if it's on schedule or not. Also, the new iMacs, a little controversy over whether or not the hard drives are replaceable, along with a couple of software updates, iPhoto and iOS getting some new versions. And are we going to be seeing the iTunes Cloud and OS X Lion sooner than expected? There's been some debate on when those might be released, and patent trolls causing some issues for indie developers. That, along with your feedback, have somebody who suggested some alternative ways for converting video for your iOS devices. Also going to take a look at the new Omni Outliner for the iPad. That was exciting to see that finally released this week. Alternative graphic creation applications, and also geeking out with the Geek Tool. If you don't know what that is, you're about to find out. So stay tuned for all of that. Before we get started, I want to take a quick moment and welcome a new sponsor to the MacCast, Stitcher. If you want to listen to the MacCast on the go, you can do it with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free application that you can download for your mobile phone or your iPad. You can listen to the latest episode of the MacCast or any of the other podcasts that you like, including some of the other ones that I'm on. We have Communicators and Mac Roundtable. If you haven't checked out those, you can get them all through Stitcher, along with your favorite radio programs on demand. It's a really cool feature there because they actually use geolocation and can get you your local radio stations directly through the application. You can get new episodes of the MacCast along with your favorite shows delivered instantly to your mobile phone without actually having to download or sync them, which sometimes can be a hassle. Not only is the application free, but now for a limited time, Stitcher's offering a chance to win a free iPad 2 to all new listeners. So if you don't have the application, just go to stitcher.com/MacCast or go to the App Store on your iPhone or the Android Marketplace, download the application, install and launch it, and then during the registration process, enter the promo code MacCast to be automatically entered to win an iPad 2. When you do that, you're actually going to get the MacCast added to your favorites automatically, so you'll be able to get your latest episodes of the MacCast through the application and have access to the thousands of other podcasts and radio programs that they have available for streaming directly to the application. You don't have to download, you don't have to sync. It's really easy to use, and they have a huge library of content for you to grab. So one new listener who signs up for Stitcher using the promo code MacCast is going to win an iPad 2. Just go to stitcher.com. That's stitcher.com/MacCast. You can get an email reminder to sign up for the app or just download the app on your iOS device and register today. And a big thank you to Stitcher for their support of the MacCast. Apple this week released a new version of Lion to developers. macOS 10 Lion Developer Preview 3 came out. It features a redesigned login screen along with a new boot animation. The login screen has a silver gradient backdrop and new icons all across the bottom for the sleep mode, restart, and shutdown. It looks much cleaner to me, much more simplified and elegant. Across the board, Apple's taking that what I think they're calling that new satin look, and I really like the look of the new login screen. There's also new graphical elements in the Finder toolbar, along with some new desktop wallpapers, including one that features a lion, which is appropriate for the new operating system. Reading list was a feature that I told you about. It had been rumored to be something that was going to be added to Safari. It's now pretty much been made official. There's a new eyeglasses icon that enables the reading list feature in Safari. What that is essentially it's a lot like Instapaper. It allows you to add certain articles and web pages that you're reading to a list that you can come back and review later. I think it also leverages the readability functionality or the reader functionality that's built into Safari in Snow Leopard. That's where you get the plain text version of an article or something that you might be reading on a blog. According to 9to5Mac, they're also reporting that the reading list feature now apparently syncs to iOS devices. This had been a critical feature that the developer of Instapaper said he wasn't really threatened by the reading list option in Safari because it didn't have the ability to sync to iOS. It's looking now that like Apple is intending to enable that. So if this comes to be, could be giving Instapaper a little bit of run for its money. I have to say, if how Apple implements this reading list feature in Safari is a lot like what they've done with, say, RSS feeds, I know some people use RSS in Safari. I've never been a really big fan of how it's implemented. I still prefer a dedicated RSS reader like Reader or NetNewsWire. I'm using Reader now currently. I've moved away from NetNewsWire, but I prefer that experience, and I think that third-party developers, applications like Instapaper, are going to be able to offer a bit more than Apple will offer out of the box, but it's nice to have the competition, and it's nice to see certain features being integrated. But I don't think it's going to be a direct copy, and I still don't think that even with the syncing, Instapaper has much to worry about. Also in OS X Lion Developer Preview, a new reminders menu in iCal, along with a bunch of changes in the Mission Control application. Actually, now Mission Control is officially a real application. Mission Control is Apple's new term in OS X Lion for the changes and additional features that they're adding to Exposé in Mac OS X. You can now add desktops right from the Mission Control interface by clicking a little plus button. Also, hovering over thumbnails, desktop thumbnails in the application actually magnifies the thumbnails so you can get a little bit better look. Another thing we've been hearing about in iOS is the fact that Apple might be in talks with Nuance, the makers of Dragon Naturally Speaking, to power a lot of the new voice commands and voice functionality in the mobile operating system. Well, it now looks like some of Nuance's technology has made its way into Mac OS X Lion. Reports are surfacing that there are Nuance voices in the speech options in the system preferences in this latest build. So this is significant because of the rumors that Nuance has been tapped to kind of power speech in iOS 5. This is the first time we've seen further indication that Apple is getting tighter with Nuance, and they'll be integrating also the technologies into the desktop operating system. The voices seem to be the same ones that are found in Nuance's RealSpeak solo application, and Nuance is well known for its advances and technology in the speech arena, so makes sense that Apple would want to partner with the best in breed. There had been some rumors that maybe Apple might try and buy Nuance. I think I said in the last show that I don't think that's going to happen. I do think Apple is going to license and integrate the technology, which they appear to be doing, at least if this latest build of Lion is any indication. So it's looking like Lion is getting close to being finished up. This release did have one little hiccup. It was pulled from software update, reportedly due to some reports of issues from some developers. I think that's been resolved. I think it is out and available now. Developers are getting their look at it, and it's sounding like we're going to see a release very soon. Apple had said OS X Lion was supposed to be due out this summer. Might be sooner than later, and more on that in a minute. And so while it's looking like OS X Lion is going to be right on schedule, or maybe even a little bit earlier than expected, the iPhone is definitely getting more and more indication that it's going to be late. We've been hearing most of the rumor sites and analysts saying that we'll see an iPhone 5 arriving in September, this fall sometime. Now we're hearing details, at least from one research analyst, Jeffrey & Company's analyst Peter Misk, that Apple might not even give us an iPhone 5 in the fall, but it actually might be their backup plan, a fallback version of the iPhone, something he's calling the iPhone 4S. So a revised version of the iPhone 4. The reason he's saying that we're not going to see an iPhone 5 is that Apple is not happy with the current 4G chips that are available. They're not meeting Apple's requirements in terms of, they don't go into specific details, but I would imagine it has to do with the number of baseband channels and frequencies that it supports, along with probably some power requirements, things like that. Basically, I think Apple's going to want a single chip that's going to be able to serve all of their different carriers and carrier markets and things like that. And also, I would imagine that it has pretty stringent power requirements and also size requirements in terms of what needs to fit into the device. A lot of the current phones that are out on the market that are supporting 4G have dual chips or a little bit larger than Apple's current iPhone 4 designs. And that probably is significant because he's saying that there's no major design changes in the next generation of the iPhone, this iPhone 4S. What Apple will be changing is adding support for HSPA Plus and also launching on a couple of additional carriers in the States, Sprint and T-Mobile. That seems to make logical sense to me. I think since Apple's added Verizon, Apple's going to want to expand to all of the carriers in the U.S. Some other design changes that are on the inside would include a bump up to Apple's new A5 processor, just like in the iPad 2. Also, some upgrades to the rear camera, moving it from 5 megapixels to 8 megapixels, so we're getting a little bit better quality there, also bringing it in line with some of the iPhone's competitors. Now, not everybody has given up on seeing an iPhone 5 in the fall. We're still hearing iPhone 5 rumors continuing. As far as what's going to change there, we're hearing larger screen, probably in the 3.7-inch range, a thinner bezel, and that screen being edge to edge. Also, there's been an early iPhone 5, or what's reportedly an early iPhone 5 case design surfacing that's showing the flash on the camera moved from being next to the image sensor over to the opposite corner of the device. So not really sure why Apple would make that design change. There had been those rumors that Apple was having some issues with the flash on the white iPhone, possibly causing some light leakage and washing out images. I don't know if moving the flash away from the sensor would help that or not, but we have seen it in the past where case designs surface that offer some indication of Apple's changes to the next generation devices before the device actually is released. And so while we won't see the official launch of the iPhone 5 or the iPhone 4S until the fall, iPhone 5s were launched in quite a different way in China this week. Police raided a company making knockoff versions of the iPhone 5, and the culprits decided to get rid of the evidence by throwing it out of an 18-story window. So iPhone 5s came raining down on the streets of China. Luckily, nobody was injured by the devices, and I believe the crooks were promptly apprehended and taken off to jail. So luckily, a happy ending to that story, because it could have been a lot worse. Can you imagine getting hit by a fake iPhone 5 on the head, and that's the way you go? It wouldn't be the way I'd want to go out, man. Some controversy erupted this week over the new Thunderbolt iMac. This came about because Otherworld Computing posted on their blog that they had discovered that replacing the main drive in the new models would cause the fans to spin out of control. In their investigation, OWC says that Apple's replaced the standard 4-pin power configuration on the SATA drives with a 7-pin configuration, the additional pins meant to pass data about controlling the fan speeds or actually monitoring the temperature on the new drives. They also say that the drives require a custom firmware on the drive to actually monitor the temperature, which is why removing the drive or actually moving it to another bay on the iMac causes the fans to spin out of control. According to the company, that means that you can only replace the internal or main drive with a drive from Apple, preventing third parties like OWC, who provide a service of hard drive of aftermarket hard drive replacements, from actually replacing the drives in the new models. The OWC blog post certainly caused a lot of hubbub in the Mac community, a lot of people pointing fingers, accusing Apple of doing this maliciously. I fall on the side of, I think it's a little bit too early to tell. Obviously, a change like this is going to upset OWC because they make some of their money or have some business out of replacing or offering replacement drives for Macs. I would say that it's a little bit too early to tell to understand why Apple made this change. Typically, Apple makes engineering or design changes for specific reasons, usually to help Apple either with making the products better or more reliable. There could be a good reason why, for size reasons or some other reason. We really don't know. It's really speculation at this point as to why Apple would have changed that power pin configuration or changed how the drive sensors work. I know in the past that I replaced a drive on an old Mac and I broke one of those temperature sensors. So it could just be something as making it more easily serviceable if it's all built into the drive and controlled with firmware. Apple can maybe make software or firmware update changes to better control the fans or better control the temperature sensing, and you're not going to have an additional part that may break during servicing. But again, totally speculating at this point. The other thing to point out is Apple has never really said that the hard drive in the iMac is a user serviceable part, although I'd probably side with OWC on something that they said, that it's not a matter of with hard drives if they'll fail, but when they will fail. And when they fail, you should have the option to go to somebody other than Apple to get your replacement drive. And if Apple has made this change to actually force you to only get drives from Apple, that's kind of a bad situation for the consumer. But I really don't think that's what's happening in this case. I don't think that Apple has an interest in making you go to Apple to get your replacement drive when it fails down the road. So there's likely a logical explanation for this. There's also likely a logical fix. It could be something as simple as a firmware update that needs to happen to allow you to put an aftermarket or a non-Apple drive back into the iMac. And we're probably going to see a software update that deals with this issue. The whole thing's going to blow over and go away. The other thing you might be wondering is that we had heard about issues like this in the past. If you remember, there were issues with replacing hard drives on older iMac models since late 2009, and software came out like the software HDD fan control that allows you to compensate for that. And as a matter of fact, that developer came out when this issue surfaced and said that his software would help in this situation, although that was a fact that OWC debated in their blog post. His software uses the smart interface to actually allow you to control the fans and had been working with certain drive replacements on older iMac models. So there might be another software solution even outside of anything that Apple might do to address this issue. So it's likely too early to kind of call this one, but certainly caused quite a bit of controversy this week. An update to iPhoto 9 came out that addresses an issue that affect some of you. I actually had an email or a couple email reports of people asking about this, and I had no idea why it was happening. And then, boom, iPhoto 9.1.3 came out. It fixes a problem that could cause some events, merged events in iPhoto on the desktop, to be split back out into multiple events when you sync them over to your iOS devices. So I'd had some of you tell me that you had 30 events in iPhoto on the desktop, and then when you synced over to your iOS device, you suddenly had 50 or 60 events. And the reason that apparently was happening was because of this bug. So if you suffered from that, if you're noticing you're having more events in iOS iPhoto than you do on your desktop, you're going to want to grab this update through Apple's software update utility, iPhoto 9.1.3. On the last show, we talked about iOS 4.3.3 update. That was the update Apple released to address the privacy issues related to the location data, all that location gate stuff, the stuff Apple had to go up to talk to Congress about. And so if you've run that update, I ran it, seemed to work fine for me, but I guess now we're hearing some reports of users having issues with Wi-Fi and wireless connectivity. I guess that what's happening is that in some instances, the little connection indicator seems to get stuck. And so you'll see that spinning pinwheel when you're trying to surf the web or access your email. The data never actually transfers, but you just get the little spinning wheel like it's trying to connect, and nothing ever really happens. If you've been hit by this issue, I did read this week about a couple of troubleshooting steps you could probably try. The first is probably the most obvious. Do your hardware reset. That's when you hold down the home and when you hold down the home button and the sleep wake button at the same time until the device resets. You can try doing that. Something else you might try is just forgetting your wireless connection. So kind of resetting the wireless connections. The way you do that is you launch settings, go into Wi-Fi, and then hit the little blue circle with the arrow. And then once you're in that screen, you'll see the option to forget the wireless network. Tap forget wireless network, and then tap forget to confirm. And then you're going to have to reconnect to the Wi-Fi network. So you're going to have to, if you have a wireless password, you're going to have to re-enter that and reconnect to the network, but just sort of reset things there. If that doesn't work, the last thing you might try is completely resetting your network connections or your network settings. Again, if you're going to do this, make sure that you have all the information so that you can get reconnected. But in this case, what you want to do is launch settings again, go under general, and then hit the reset option. And then from within there, you'll see the option to reset network settings. You might be prompted to enter your security PIN to access that screen. Go ahead and enter that if you need to, and reset the network. And hopefully one of these things will work to resolve that connectivity issue. If you own one of Apple's new Apple TV 2s, a software update came out for that this week. 4.2.2 was released. It addresses a number of issues, including an issue where audio is not output when playing some video content. Also, an issue where video is not output when playing some video content. Well, I guess you really wouldn't be playing it then, so that's kind of a bigger one. If you have an Apple TV, it should be playing video. If you own a TV or receiver that allows for 16-bit audio, there's now an audio output setting for switching to 16-bit audio for compatibility. Also improves performance with fast forwarding and rewinding, and addresses an issue where some description information may not be displayed for some movies. Finally, addresses an issue in which YouTube subscription videos were not ordered in the correct order by date. So if you have your Apple TV 2, just run software update on it and it can pick it up through the built-in software update mechanism. About a year ago, when Apple said that OS X, the next version of OS X, OS X Lion, would be out this summer, I figured that would be around June, sometime probably around WWDC. Well, it's sounding like there's potential, at least according to Cult of Mac, that we might see it a little bit earlier than that. They say that they've received reports of an all-hands retail store meeting scheduled for the morning of May 28th, and that to them indicates that Apple might be getting ready to launch Lion on or around that time. They're also saying that Apple could also debut their new iCloud update to Mobile Me. That rumor seems to have been further propped up this week by the fact that Amazon has stopped sales of Mobile Me on their website. You may remember that Apple pulled Mobile Me boxes, retail boxes, from their retail stores several months ago. And at that time, rumors also were flying that Apple was getting ready to update the Mobile Me service. I have to say, I think May 28th is probably going to be a little bit too early, both for OS X Lion and for the iCloud service. Stranger things have happened, but I'm not holding my breath for that. I think we'll see it more in that June timeframe, probably sometime right after WWDC, maybe even an announcement at WWDC of an actual release date. But not really sure then what the all-hands meeting on the morning of the 28th would be for, but I'm not siding with Cult of Mac on this one. And then finally in the news for this week, some disturbing news for a couple of indie app developers on iOS. At least two developers, Computer Logic and James Thompson, the developer of pCalc, were hit with some letters threatening them with potential lawsuits if they did not pay licensing for patents related to in-app purchase and upgrades. It's a little bit disturbing news because you would think that the corporation behind the patents would be going after Apple, not the individual developers, but my guess is that they don't feel that they could probably go up against Apple's lawyers with these lawsuits. Now, Thompson isn't saying exactly who sent him the letters, but Logix said they received theirs from a company called Loadsys. If you start doing the research and looking back on these things, you'll discover that Loadsys actually acquired the patent in question from a guy named Dan Abelow in 2004. But when you go look at the actual patent holder listed on the patent itself, it's listed as Ferrera Ethereal LLC. And then following that back, you'll discover that that company is reported to be a shell company for a company called Intellectual Ventures, which is known for its patent trolling behavior. In case you don't know what patent trolling is, that's basically companies who all they do is buy up patents or acquire patents and then file lawsuits, and that's what they use as their sole source of income. Now, not illegal, but doesn't really give you a good feeling at the end of the day that that's sort of how you make your living, is just going after getting licensing fees. They're giving these developers notice that they need to pay the licensing or face a lawsuit. I think they gave them about 7 days to respond. My guess is that, once again, that they're going after the small guys, figuring they're much easier targets than Apple, and they have much better chance of getting the developers just to pay individually. The hope is that Apple will step up and jump in and help these guys out. Hopefully that'll be something that happens, and I can report back to you about that on the next show. And with that, that's going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I want to take a quick moment, thank another one of our show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. Notebook is a great application if you need to do research, if you're going to be taking notes, if you're going to be doing any kind of planning. You can throw all that stuff into your notebook. It also has great built-in tools for doing drawing, adding charts and graphs, doing all kinds of annotation. As a matter of fact, you can drop in things like PDFs and then layer annotations on top of that. So if you need to put on flags or sticky notes or additional information and keep that merged in and combined with your own notes, your own research, maybe stuff imported from the web, also additional images, basically acts exactly like a physical real world notebook, allowing you to compile and pull in things from all kinds of different sources, put those into sections, and keep it all organized. And then what's great is, because it's digital, you have the ability to index and search through that stuff. As a matter of fact, Notebook has built into it something called the Multidex that actually automatically does a lot of the indexing and applying of metadata to your information. So you can search through that through in multiple ways, making it quick and easy to find the stuff that you need to get at later. So you can check it out. They have free trials, demos available on their website. So try before you buy. It's a really great product. I think you'll really like it. And there's some great how-to videos done by our friend Don McAllister from Screencasts Online on the website. So that'll get you up and running real quickly with the application. They also have some starter notebooks built right into the application that will get you up and running very quickly. So check it out, circusponies.com, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So on the last show, I had a question from somebody who wanted to know about getting non-standard movie formats, non-QuickTime supported movie formats into iTunes for organization and for viewing. And one of the things that I said is probably the best thing to do would be just to convert those from whatever format, in this case it was AVI, over to QuickTime or iTunes compatible format using a tool like Handbrake. A lot of people use Handbrake and really like it. I think it's a great application, and I've used it for my video conversions for a long time. Well, Keith sent along a recommendation for an alternative product that might be a little bit simpler for some people. Keith recommends something called EVOM from Tiny App Factory. I'll have a link to that in the show notes at maccast.com. What's great about this is, like Handbrake, it is a free application, but it offers a simpler interface. You don't get as much control, but it is really easy to use and does a really nice job. I played around with it. It's a one window interface. So you launch the application, you get a little window, and all you do then is drop a video in, or it has another cool feature where you can drop in a URL from a website, and then it will do the video conversion. If you drop in a URL, say from YouTube, it is even cooler because it'll actually download that video for you and then perform the conversion all in one easy step. And once you've dropped your video or your link onto the one window interface, it then pops up and sort of gives you a wizard to prompt you through the different options for how to do the conversion. So you can convert your video to a bunch of different formats, AVI, FLV, HTML5, which will actually generate an H.264 and an OGG video format. So you'll be able to put that on your website. Supports OGG, OGG video, MOV, MP3, MP4, MPEG, and WMV. So a bunch of different formats. You have, in terms of options for quality, low, medium, high. So not a lot of finite control, like I mentioned, but gives you some presets that you can work with. And then you can set up your destination, be it iTunes, an iPod, your Apple TV. You can go direct to YouTube with it, or even output your video just to a folder and then choose what to do with it later. It also has a nice option where you can save just the audio. So if you just want to extract the audio from a video in MP3 you can do that as well. So that's Evom from Tiny App Factory. You may know them. I actually use their software for ripping DVDs, for extracting and making DVD backups, and that's called Ripit. And that's another great application. So really good company, make good stuff, and thanks, Keith, for the recommendation. Another company that I'm a big fan of that makes really great stuff is the Omni Group. So OmniFocus, OmniGraffle, great application for doing diagramming and all kinds of planning. I use it in my web development work, but you can use it for all sorts of stuff. And another great product they make is Omni Outliner. And Omni Group had committed a while back that they would convert all of their applications over to iOS. And one that a lot of people have been waiting on is Omni Outliner for iPad. Well, that came out this week and I'm a big fan. So I grabbed a copy immediately and wanted to play around with it and try it out. And I thought I'd give you a little review, sort of my first impressions and thoughts on the product. I have to say, as expected, it has a nice, clean, simple interface, but it has a lot of the features built into it. Not all of them yet. I think it's still somewhat a work in progress, but I have full faith that Omni's going to continue to rev and update and add new features, usually pretty quickly. That's sort of how the prior applications have gone when they've been launched on the iPad. They start off with a base set of really good core features, and then they continue to expand through updates. I noticed immediately that it was very easy to do collapsing and expanding of sections, to do indents and outdents through a simple little toolbar interface. They have support for the notes, also support for columns. Has a really nice feature because you can hide or show the columns pretty easily, and has full support for all of your styles. So all of that stuff comes in. You can also do customized numbering, has built-in styles for doing citations and highlighting with different colors. As far as how you get data in and out, it has iDisk and WebDAV support. You can also, of course, bring documents in and out through the iTunes file management system as well. And it does have the ability to export to the Omni Outliner format, OPML, HTML, both the dynamic and static HTML versions, as well as a text file, TXT file. So I used it this week to work on my show notes for MacCast. What's great is I was able to take my template that I have from my desktop and bring that right into the application on the iPad, and all of my formatting and my styles and stuff transferred over with that. So I was able to get up and running really quickly and easily. It was easy to add new rows and put new information into it. It also has a really nice edit mode. So you can go into edit mode, you can select multiple rows to work with and apply your styles and formatting. You can add new styles and adjust that from the menus and move elements around pretty quickly and easily. So it was very easy to work with. Again, nice, clean, simple interface, and I really liked that in the product. If you're an Omni Outliner user and a fan of Omni Outliner, I think you're really going to be happy with this release. That said, I think that, as I was mentioning earlier, there are some features that are still coming that need to come to really make it as full-featured as I'd like to see. Some of the features I'd like to see added is I'd like to see some control for adding paragraph breaks within a section. Right now, you can't do that in the rows. One workaround for that I did discover, though, is that you can add notes, and in the notes section, you can put in line breaks. So when you hit a return, you actually do get a line break instead of a new row. So what you can do is you can put your text into the notes section and then cut that and then paste it into the row, and it will maintain that formatting. You can also work with your text outside of Omni Outliner, and when you paste that in, any line breaks will come in faithfully from the paste. The other thing that I'd like to see is a way to actually split content within a row into a new row. Right now, there doesn't seem to be a way to do that. So like on the desktop, typically I would hold control and hit return. Wherever my insertion point was, at that point, it's going to actually create a new row within the outline. That ability doesn't seem to be there in Omni Outliner for the iPad, so I'd like to see that added. I already mentioned that they have support for iDisk and WebDAV. That's really nice, but I, like a lot of people, am a Dropbox user. I'd like to see them add support for Dropbox. I think that is something that they're working on. But they're saying that when they add it, they want the ability to actually do true live syncing with Dropbox. And I think that's a little bit more complicated than just adding simple Dropbox support into the app. So I would expect that to be something coming in the future. A lot of good support, as I mentioned, for exporting to different file formats, but you probably noticed that one of them that's missing is PDF. So the ability to export to PDF would be really nice. The other thing is, I did not see support for the document interchange in iOS. So that's the open-end option to be able to transfer your document from one iOS application to another directly. Right now, what you'd have to do is upload it to your iDisk or some other web dev server and then pull that down from another application that can connect to iDisk or web dev, or you'd have to go through your desktop as an intermediary in iTunes to get those documents in and out. So I think all those features are going to be coming. I don't know what the order is that they'll be working on them in, but so far, I have to say it's an impressive product right out of the gate. I think most of the features and functionality that you're going to need are in there, and I expect them fully to start rolling out updates and pushing new features as they get feedback from users. One of the great things about Omni is they listen to their customers, and they're probably going to use feedback to determine how they'll roll out additional enhancements and additional functionality. Just if you're expecting everything to be there from day one, it's probably not 100% there yet, but I would say it's more than good enough to satisfy the needs of most users and well worth checking out if you're looking for an outliner for the iPad. And so if you've been waiting on it, if you're a current Omni Outliner user, you can pick it up. It's available now, and it's very exciting to have another a great Omni product on the iPad. One of the stories that we often hear about with respect to Apple's Find My iPhone service is exactly what it was designed to be for recovering your iPhone if it gets lost or stolen. And we hear a lot of these great stories. As a matter of fact, Michael Johnston has a great one. If you haven't heard it, check out the We Have Communicators, where he talks about losing his iPhone on the Superman ride. It goes flying off, and there's a harrowing story and tale about how he gets that back using the Find My iPhone feature. So that's typically how it's used. But I received an email this week from Peter, and he's actually using Find My iPhone in a little bit different way to actually help his girlfriend, her brother, and her dad, who are doing a fundraising cycling trip in the UK. And he's the support vehicle for them. So he sent me this email. Great story. They're cycling from Land's End in Cornwall, UK, to John O'Groats at the northern tip of the Scottish mainland. Hopefully, I didn't just mutilate that name. It's basically over 900 miles. They're going to be cycling over 13 days. They're doing it now. I think they're about 7 days into it. They're raising money for meningitis research. I'll have a link to their fundraising site and their blog at maccast.com so you can sort of follow their progress, because Pete's driving the support vehicle. They've borrowed an iPad so he can actually update the website and update their progress for everybody who's following along. But he's also using the iPad along with his girlfriend's iPhone to do geolocation, so to determine the location of where he is and where they are, and he's using Find My iPhone for that. So he has both the devices registered with Find My iPhone. He can check in, see where his girlfriend and the cyclists are relative to where he is, and he said it's worked out really great because he can pull them both up and Find My iPhone and then sort of toggle between the two locations to determine where he needs to be to provide support, to replenish their supplies, and things like that. The other thing he mentioned is that they're using an application called Cycle Meter to actually track the route and the stats of the ride. And what's really cool about that application is the data can be gathered and then uploaded to the website and shared on a Google Map. So you can actually see the progress. You can see how fast they're traveling each day of the ride and how far they've gotten. And it makes it very easy for him to update the site on the road, all from an iOS device, an iPad, and an iPhone. So that's really, really cool. They're about halfway to their goal of raising £1,000, and I'll have more information on the in the show notes at maccast.com if you want to check it out and maybe even make a donation to their cause. If you had asked anybody about 10 years ago for a recommendation for applications for creating graphics on the Mac, for doing graphic design, for doing illustration, I think there'd be no question that probably you would get the same answer, and really only one answer, and that would be the Adobe products. You use Photoshop and you use Illustrator. That was kind of the options back in the day. Well, times have kind of really changed, because I got an email this week from Andrew, and he was looking for a recommendation for a graphics app for creating some images for, in his case, iPhone icons, but it really could be any kind of graphic design, logo design, anything that you need to do on the Mac. And Photoshop is still there. It's probably still the number one professional tool, Photoshop and Illustrator, but we have a lot of alternatives. And Andrew specifically mentioned Pixelmator, which is a great image editor for the Mac, a great alternative image editor. I'm actually using a program called Acorn because I don't need everything that Photoshop provides. I don't need all those features, but it still has a lot of the advanced features and can get you a long way toward a lot of the functionality of Photoshop without the Photoshop price. And in some cases, without the kind of learning curve that Photoshop or some other applications have. So a lot of the newer applications are simpler. They're addressing some of the issues and meeting the needs of alternative users. And so it's really cool to see that we have all these alternative applications. But Andrew was also kind of asking for a recommendation on how do I do this stuff, because he specifically mentioned that he felt that Photoshop and Pixelmator and these types of applications were not really for creating graphics, for generating original images, but more for manipulating and editing existing images. And that's not quite 100% true, Andrew, but I understand where you're coming from in that regard. And so what I think in your case you're looking for is you're looking for a drawing application. You're looking for something more like Illustrator that you could use to illustrate an image, and then you might pull it into a program like Pixelmator or Photoshop to kind of apply some effects, maybe do the rounding of the edges and kind of get that buttony kind of candy-like look to the icon and sort of enhance it. So although you could do the drawing and create your icon and do everything in something like Photoshop or Pixelmator, I think you probably want a drawing application. And if you don't want to go with Illustrator, there are several alternatives now that you can take a look at. So I just did a quick search. I haven't used all these applications, so I can't speak to which one is specifically better than one or the other. I'm an Illustrator user myself, but if that's too pricey for you, there's a couple of different applications that you might want to check out. There's one called Sketch from Bohemian Coding, bohemiancoding.com. Also another one called Vector Designer. That one is from Tweakersoft. As a matter of fact, I think both of these applications are available in the Mac App Store if you want to pick them up from there. And very reasonably priced and offer a lot of the features and functionality that you'll find in a program like Illustrator. There's also one from Freeverse called Lineform. That's also worth maybe taking a look at. And if you want to go open source, I'm not a huge fan of open source on the image editor side. That would be something like GIMP, Graphic Image Manipulation Program, I think is what it stands for. Hopefully I'm getting that acronym right. That's like an open source version of Photoshop. They also have an open source version of Illustrator, or equivalent to Illustrator, something called Inkscape. Yeah, I read a couple things. It seems to have pretty good reviews. It is open source software. It runs on that X11 layer, that Unix layer in OS X. So when you run the application, it's going to have to launch X11. If you don't have that installed, you'll need to install that from your original system disks. But it's free. It offers a lot of the features and functionality that you'll find in a typical drawing program like Illustrator. It just has a different look to it. And that's one of the things that I'm not a big fan of with the open source software. A lot of the open source software, especially when it runs in that X11 layer, is you kind of get that Unix-y style look to it. So the user interface doesn't feel 100% Mac-like. But certainly if you need that kind of functionality and you want something very powerful for free, open source is a great way to go. And Inkscape looks like a nice option. So you can take a look at any one or all of those, and I'm sure one of them will get you up and running and allow you to design the icon that you're looking for. I do think when you're talking about drawing and image manipulation tools, the two kind of go together. I find myself moving back and forth between Photoshop and Illustrator a lot when I'm working on various projects, depending upon what the needs are, because certain applications are better, or I find are lend themselves more easily to doing certain types of tasks. So doing things like drop shadows and adding that sort of reflective look, I like to do in an application like Photoshop. If I'm doing just the line graphics, the base graphics for an image, creating something like you mentioned, I'll typically start in Illustrator. So a lot of times I'll start a project in Illustrator and sort of finish it off in Photoshop, and the two go hand in hand. So you're probably still going to want to have an application like Photoshop or Pixelmator at some point during your project. So take a look at both sides of things. Lifehacker actually has a really nice tutorial. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com on how to create an iOS looking icon completely in Photoshop. Although they do start with a base image that they bring in, and that image to me looks like it was probably originally created in something like Illustrator. So take a look at that tutorial if you want to see how to give that sort of iOS rounded corner glossy button look. If you want to get that look and you're not graphically inclined, there is another cool option for you to take a look at. There's an application called Art Text from Beelight. Beelight's been around making Mac software for a long time. They make really nice stuff. They have an interior design, 3D interior design application that's really good. They have a free version, a light version of Art Text actually available on the App Store. So you can try it out, you can see. And what Art Text will allow you to do is they have some kind of canned projects, some canned starting points for buttons, for icons. You can pull in clip art, you can apply effects to text, you can give it that beveled look and the rounded look and stuff like that by just adjusting some sliders and layering some elements on top of each other. So you don't actually have to create something from scratch and draw it. You can just work within the application and sort of build up your icon or your image. And like I said, that's really great for somebody who maybe isn't an illustrator. Maybe you're not really good at drawing, but you want to be able to get a cool or create a cool button or a logo or something to use on your website. And so Art Text is a really cool application for that. And you can try it out for free through the App Store. And then if you need more of the advanced features, you can pick up the paid version of that app. So I'll have more information and links to all of this stuff in the show notes at maccast.com. And Andrew, good luck with your project. And then lastly today, we're going to geek out a little bit. I'm going to get a little bit technical. I'm going to tell you about a tool. It's not too technical. I'm going to tell you about a cool system preference pane that you can use to display different kinds of information right on your desktop. It's almost kind of like a live desktop sort of thing. The application is called Geek Tool. I think I've mentioned it on the show years ago, but really hadn't revisited it, and I thought it would be time to do that. Basically, what Geek Tool does is it allows you to monitor different types of activity on your operating system. It has these three sort of default plugins. So you install the system preference pane. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. And then it comes with three different options. It has a file plugin that'll allow you to display any text file on your desktop. So that's great if you want to load up, say, a log file, a system log file, and have that displayed sort of layered right on top of your desktop background. It also has a shell mode, which will allow you to launch any custom scripts or any terminal commands and then have those commands rerun and update. And you can have these things refresh. So if you have something like a log file that gets updated, you can have it refresh after a certain period of time, after a certain number of seconds. Same thing with shell scripts or terminal commands, you can have those re-execute. And the other module it has sort of built in is an image module that will allow you to display an image and have that image update. So that's great for like webcam images or any image that might be on the web that gets updated. A good example of that would be like a weather image. So if you want to see the weather from AccuWeather or weather.com, the graphic, you could have a link to that and you could have that refresh and update right there sort of embedded on your desktop. And they call these things geeklets, kind of like widgets, dashboard widgets, except they run right on top of your desktop. So that can be very useful for monitoring certain types of information. So I like to use Geektool to run certain terminal commands and have that information update right on my desktop. That way I don't have to open up a terminal to monitor certain events and information that might be happening on my Mac. So a good example of that would be Top, which is kind of like the activity monitor where you can monitor your CPU usage, the processes that are going on your Mac, how much memory an application is using up, how much resources it's actually taking up on your system. And so I can have that output displayed right on top of my desktop using Geektool. And there's additional geeklets that you can download. People can write them and share them. There's a website, macosxtips.co.uk/geeklet. If you go there, there's additional geeklets that you can download and add to Geektool. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes at maccast.com. But I thought I'd share one with you. It's a little bit technical. It's actually a way to display your Twitter feed from the command line. So typically we use a GUI. You can use an application for that. If you want to geek out and have it as just text only run from the command line, you can actually make that happen using Geektool. So the first thing you do is you download and install Geektool. And then for this to work from the command line, we're actually going to run Python. Python is a language that is available in Mac OS X, but we need some additional libraries, some additional Python libraries to actually make this script work. And so you need to install the Python Twitter tools. Luckily, that's pretty easy to do from the command line. And we're going to use the terminal. So if you're not comfortable working in the terminal, you probably don't want to do this. The other thing I'll say, and this is just to cover ourselves, is that you probably should have a backup before you start messing around in the terminal. I think that's just generally good advice, but really, with this tip, you're probably not going to do anything to damage your system. It's very unlikely that anything would go wrong. But let's have that backup just in case. So go ahead and launch the terminal. And then once that comes up, we're going to use the sudo command because we need to request permission to run this installer. So this would be similar to what would happen if you launched an application installer. It's going to request your admin username and password so that you can actually do the installation. Same thing here, but we have to do it from the terminal. So we use a command called sudo. And so you'll type sudo space easy underscore install space and then Twitter. And so that's going to launch the little Python installer and go out and grab the Twitter tools for Python and install them on your Mac. The place it's going to put them is in your user local bin directory. And when I'm saying user, the path for that is /usr/local/bin. And it's going to install some Python libraries, basically some scripts that it can run, and it's going to be the Twitter tools for that. So once those have installed, then you need to set up Twitter, or rather you need to set up the Python script or the Python language to have permissions to access your Twitter account. That's part of the Twitter security. They use a technology called OAuth. So we need to OAuth against your Twitter account. So again, in the terminal, just type the command Twitter. That's going to execute the Python Twitter tools. It will launch your web browser and it's going to go out to your Twitter account. You're going to need to log into your Twitter account, and then you're going to authorize the script to be able to access your Twitter account. Once you've logged in and said it's okay and given it access, then it's going to give you a little code that you'll need to take back into the terminal. You'll see the prompt there asking for the OAuth code, and you'll plug that in. Once you've plugged that in, what's going to happen is the script's going to create a little authorization file that'll be placed into your home directory, and the name of that file is going to be .twitter_OAuth. That's an invisible file, but you'd be able to view that from the command line if you wanted to see that. And that's just basically going to have the keys in it to authorize the script to actually go out and get the information from your Twitter account. So once all of that's done and installed, then the last step is to download and install the Twitter Geeklet from that website I was telling you about earlier, macosxtips.co.uk/geeklets. I'll actually have a link directly to the Twitter Geeklet in the show notes at maccast.com, so you can download that. Once that's downloaded, just go ahead and double-click it. That will launch it into Geek Tools and install it, or basically place it on your desktop. And once you've done that, you can go into the Geek Tools system preferences and select that Geeklet from your desktop, and that will bring up its properties window. And then you can play around with the different settings and stuff like that in there. So you can adjust the refresh, you can change the colors, you can change the position and size on your desktop and put it wherever you'd like. So that's how you install a Twitter feed right onto your desktop using Geek Tool. You can do a bunch of other stuff with this. You can find other Geeklets, like I said, and just play around with it. But it is a lot of fun, and it can be very useful if you just need to monitor certain shell scripts or terminal scripts right from the desktop without having to open up a terminal window. You can just leave them up and running and see what's going on. I use Expose just to display my desktop, and I can get a quick look at, say, an error log file without having to go into the terminal. So that's Geek Tool, and that's going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I want to thank all of my show sponsors. Gazelle, if you want to get cash for your old electronics and not have to deal with the hassles of auction websites, you can do a simple search and get an upfront offer over at gazelle.com. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook, check out the software as well as get free trial over at circusponies.com. Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, check out their stuff and get demos over at smilesoftware.com. Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze and PowerSave Mac, you can get more information and check out the software at phoronix.com. And Stitcher, download their free app for your mobile phone or iPad, and you can listen to your favorite podcasts or radio programs on demand without having to download or sync. And if you're a new Stitcher listener, use the code MACCAST when you sign up to be entered to win an iPad 2. You can get more details at stitcher.com/MACCAST. That's STITCHER.com/MACCAST. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. A big thank you to you for your support of the podcast. I appreciate you staying subscribed and listening. If you have any feedback for me, please send your comments, your emails to maccast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the voicemail line. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9, or you can use Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast, and you can leave a voicemail there. If you do leave a voicemail, if you could leave your email address and spell it out for me, that's greatly appreciated. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. And on Twitter and Facebook, I just try and post cool Mac stuff that I find throughout the week. And it's a lot of fun. And if you'd like to comment on the community, I'd like to see people get a little more active over on the MacCast Facebook page, because you can actually post your own photos, you can post your own feedback and stuff like that. It's really a two-way community. And if you'd like to participate, I'd absolutely love that. So if you're on Facebook, check that out. All right, new music for you today is from Derek Clegg. You've probably heard him on the podcast before. He's one of my favorite MacCast artists. He just came out with a new album. It's actually a new digital album that you can get for free. I'll have a link to that in the show notes at maccast.com. I'd also encourage you to go check out Derek's website. There'll be a link for that there as well. And if you really like his stuff and want to support him, please buy his albums on iTunes. He has a number of other albums available on iTunes. It's a great way to support the artists who provide this great music for us to listen to on the MacCast. So this is Fallen Down by Derek Clegg. Enjoy, and I will see you all next time.
It's hard for me to think that you are not around. My mind plays tricks sometimes when I'm feeling down. I want you'll come to me, falling down. It's falling down. When you hit the ground, you're falling down. And I believe in something I cannot change. I've got to face the fact that I let you live in pain. The same feelings when you were around. I'm hopeful in the future that I can succeed, crushing this spirit that's inside.